All right, we're holding on Chof Beis on the Beis, three lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah that Rav Gamliel had said that there are a few things that you're allowed to do on Yom Tov, which the Chachamim disagreed with. One of them was to put in mugmar, which is incense. You put it on coals in order to make a fragrance in the house. So we discussed, the Gemara had discussed what exactly, there might be two purposes you might use mugmar for. One is to make a fragrance in the house. The other one is to perfume clothing. And the Gemara ended up concluding that when it's to perfume clothing, everybody would agree it's aser. The Machlokes says, well, you're doing it in order to perfume the house. Rav Gamliel allows it, because after all, it's something for human enjoyment. So it's part of Malachas Echol Nefesh, whereas the Chachamim say it has to be Shavah Echol Nefesh. It has to be something that is equally, that's equally enjoyable and usable by everybody, whereas Mugmer is really only for people who are very finicky or refined, or people who have bad odors or whatever. It's not meant for the average person. Which, by the way, there is a good deal of discussion in Halacha that partly based on that Gemara and partly based on the next piece that we're going to have over here, which continues on this topic of using smoke for fumigating things. There's a good deal of discussion among the Achronim about smoking on Yom Tov. Leaving aside the whole question of smoking itself nowadays, they know is not healthy for you, but back before they knew that, or even now, to the extent that people have a craving for it. So there's a good deal of discussion among poskim over the last few hundred years, ever since tobacco was discovered, about whether you're allowed to smoke on Yom Tov or not. On the one hand, you're allowed to use fire on Yom Tov, as we know. On the other hand, smoking cigarettes, there is a certain degree, as the Gemara is going to discuss now in a different context, of putting out fire, because not just when you put out the cigarette, but also because as the tobacco is lighting up, parts of it light up, parts of it go out as you're breathing it. There's also the question again of whether it's considered shavah l'chol nefesh, given that not everybody smokes. And there are a number of other issues that different achronim bring up, pro and con it. Lemaisa, the consensus of poskim seems to be that, at least, again, leaving aside all the health issues with it, that from the point of view of the dinim of Yom Tov, in general, it is allowed, but, they point out certain gotchas that you'd have to be careful of in order not to be breaking things of Yom Tov, like, for example, burning words that might be on the wrapper or whatever. Anyway, so the Gemara starts off, three lines from the bottom, Iboilahu Maul Ashen. Are you allowed on Yom Tov to use smoke to fumigate fruit? Now, you do it. In other words, what you do, first of all, I mean, it could be obviously in order to get rid of bugs and whatever, but in terms of what the Gemara is talking about, Rashi explains, we're talking about that you use perfumes to, you burn them, and the smoke of them, you put the fruit or the produce or whatever in the smoke of them in order that they should absorb that flavor. So it's sort of like when they make smoked meat. And they have that now the meat has a flavor of the wood or whatever kind of wood they use to smoke it. So here it would be the same kind of thing. You'd use spices in order for the fruit to absorb that flavor. So all you're allowed to do that. Rabbi Yirmiyah ba'aba amar rab osu, Shmuel amar mutter. So okay, so Rabbi Yirmiyah ba'aba says in the name of rab that's osu, Shmuel says it's mutter. And the Gemara continues, Rav Huna amar osu mepnei mechaber. Rav Huna says, now there's two possible reasons you could say that it's osur. One is because it's not shavah l'chol nefesh, again, because most people don't care about that thing, so therefore it's only for an istinis, it's only for a person who's particularly delicate or finicky or whatever. And then you could also take the view that there's an ad malacha involved. Well, it's both, really. If it's not shavah l'chol nefesh, then we have to be concerned about the malacha involved. So Rav Huna is clarifying for us what the malacha is that's involved. Rav Huna amar osu mepnei mechaber, because you're putting out the coals. Because when you sprinkle the spice powder on them, then it causes some of the coals to go out. Amar le Rav Nachman v'name of mayim mepnei mager. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, why are you focusing on the mechaber? You could just as well focus on the mager. The fact is you're causing the coals to burn brighter. Not the coals so much, but the spices themselves, you're burning them. And the fact that that's also an Avmalach after all. Fine, you're allowed to burn things on Yom Tov, but again, only for Oichol Nefesh. This is not Oichol Nefesh because it's not Shavu L'chol Nefesh. It's not something that everybody does. So why don't you mention that? Amalei, instead of when it tells him, it's actually both. First, it causes some of the coals to be extinguished when you pour the spices on them, and then afterwards it causes it to burn. So I'm just mentioning, I mentioned the first thing, the mechaber, but you're right, there is also mavir involved as well. So the Gemara continues, Amar of Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda says, based on that, al gabe gachelas oser, so it would be oser if you're doing that you're sprinkling the powdered spices on coals, for the reason Rav Huna mentioned, because then you're first extinguishing some of the coals, and afterwards causing everything to burn more. Al gabe cheres muter. But suppose you take a piece of earthenware, which you heated up, and you're going to now sprinkle the spices on it, and the same thing will happen. The heat of it will cause it to wax throughout the room, and in particular to rise and then to get absorbed into the food. That would be mutter, because now there's no putting out. And it's also, Rashi explains, it's also kilachayad. It's also doing the malacha in an unusual way, so therefore it should be mutter on Yom Tov. Tosfos disagrees with that last point and says that actually Rabbi Yehuda might be taking a view that even though it's havara shalot tzardach, even though it's not a necessity for Yom Tov, again, because not everybody fumigates and perfumes their fruit that way, nevertheless, he would hold that you're allowed to do such havara on Yom Tov where it's not l'tzardach, where it's not strictly for the need of Yom Tov. So now Tosfos goes on to say that actually the halacha, in that case, the halacha would not be like that. The halacha is rather that havara is an avmalacha just like any other, and it's only allowed for Tzarech Yom Tov, so therefore you have to be careful not to light fires or candles on Yom Tov for no purpose at all. Tosfos mentioned something called a Ner Shabbatola, where you're lighting a candle, not for any particular reason, not because you need the light, not because you're doing it in honor of Yom Tov or whatever, but just you're lighting a candle. So then you wouldn't be allowed to do that. And that's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if you do it on a piece of hot earthenware, then it'll be mutter. On the other hand, Rabba Omar al Gabi Cheres Nami Osir. Rabba says it will in fact also be osir if you do it on top of a piece of earthenware. Mishum de Kamoda Drecha. Because then you have a different problem. You have something that didn't have a fragrance in it before is now getting a fragrance. So it's almost like doing a new malacha, Rashi says. So therefore, so now you have to do it on the hot earthenware. Yeah, you're not doing mechaber, but you're still causing that now the earthenware absorbs a fragrance that you didn't before. This molad, by the way, is an interesting thing. But post can talk about what's the basis to not use electricity on Yom Tov. So on Shabbos, you have a variety of different opinions why, although you actually did have early on, there were opinions that said that electricity is mutter, but those were overruled pretty much, you know, everybody knows that electricity on Shabbos is also, and there's a few different possibilities why. Among them is that one of them is the malacha of mavir, because closing an electric circuit or opening it often causes sparks. Now, in that case, if it was a matter of mavir, it should be mutter on Yom Tov. We know you're allowed to use fire on Yom Tov. So there's a few other issues that the poskim pointed out with it. One of them is what all Gemara is talking about, molid, where you're causing something new. You're creating an electric field and an electric potential in the wires that there wasn't there before until you close the circuit, because of course the electricity doesn't flow unless you close the circuit, and that would be another reason, that would be a reason to ask for electricity on Yom Tov as well. With that said though, now the Alter Rebbe does bring in connection with this Molid Reach, that if you have something that has already absorbed a fragrance, and now you just want to intensify the fragrance of the same kind, then the Alter Rebbe says it would be mutter. Only to introduce a new fragrance with the osir. Based on that, then, it might be, according to that, now, of course, electricity wasn't known in the Alter Rebbe's times yet, or at least it didn't have practical applications, but nowadays, some poskim say maybe based on that, the Alter Rebbe would allow you to turn up a heating element, like on a stove or something, just not to turn it down, because what you're doing is you're increasing the electric potential in the wires, you're not creating something new. And in fact, you have certain electric stoves where nowadays I think it's more common that most of them are this way, where you turn the element up and it goes smoothly up. Like you have, as you tune it more, the electricity goes higher and higher. You don't have where you're tuning off one circuit and tuning on another. According to the Alter Rebbe, it's possible that those might be mutter. That's obviously something to ask a shayla about. Continuing back to the Gemara, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef de Amitai Rayu, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef both say in this connection, Sachufi Kosa Ashiroi de Yema Tava Osir, to overturn a cup, where again, you had this cup was full of fragrance, and now you're going to overturn it on top of Shiroi, on top of silk garments, the Yema Tava on Yom Tov, again with the idea of perfuming the garments, Osir, that would be Osir, my time, Mishim to Kamoy Ledrecha, again, because you're creating a fragrance in the silks, in the clothing that you didn't have there before. So the Gemara asks, so why is it any different than, for example, we're going to learn later on in Armasechta, that you're allowed to take, if you have a twig from a spicy or fragrant plant, you're allowed to, on Yom Tov, Moloi Mariachba, you're allowed to roll it between your fingers in order to crush it a little bit so that the fragrance comes out, and then Mariachba, and then you're allowed to smell it. Or similar to the Koitma, you're allowed to cut off, break off a piece of the end of it, or maybe again in order for the fragrance to come out more strongly, or maybe Yachboy, and then you can smell it. So over there on the face of it, isn't that the same as Moled Reyach? Because before the twig didn't have that much of a fragrance, and now it does. And the answer is that's exactly it. Hosam Recha Miha Issa, because over there the smell taka exists already in the twig. But it's Sufi to come Moisif Recha. You're adding to that. To that fragrance, you're making it more intense by crushing or breaking off a piece of the twig, therefore that's mutter. Hacha eludi hu dekamei ledrecha, whereas over here with the cup and the silk garments, you're actually creating a new fragrance in them that they didn't have before, and that we're saying would be also. Okay. Going back now to the question of using perfumes. To perfume the smoke of perfumes of spices to perfume fruit. So we said we had a few different opinions. We had Rav saying it's osir. We had Shmuel saying it's mutter. We had Rav Huna explaining that according to Rav it would be osir because mechaba. We had Rava saying therefore that it would be osir even if there's no mechaba involved because you're creating a new fragrance. But Rava Omer Avgabe Gachelas Nami Mutter. Rava says, never mind doing it on top of cheres, like what Rava says. It would even be mutter to do it on top of the coals, just to put the perfume on the coals, needed to have a bisra agumri, because it's really no different than the case of putting meat on coal to roast, where you're definitely allowed to do that on Yom Tov. You're going to have that, so Rashi explains. Now let's look at the different possibilities. Why we said that it might be also. Is there, as far as Ochol Nefesh, sure, it's Shrovel Ochol Nefesh. So meat on coals is Shrovel Ochol Nefesh. Anybody can enjoy a good roasted piece of meat roasted on the coals. The same way anybody can enjoy fruit that was fumigated with these sweet-smelling perfumes. So therefore, it should be mutter on those grounds, like Shmuel. As far as Rav Huna's point that you're going to be putting out the coals and relighting them, that is also no osir because that's also mutter. It can't be osir on those grounds, and we'll talk in a second why. And as far as that you're creating a fragrance, so when you roast meat on coals, the meat now has a fragrance of the coals and it's still mutter. So therefore, Robert is saying that therefore to do that with perfumes, to perfume fruit should be mutter. Now to do it, to perfume the room, that Robert is going to agree is osir because that's not oichel nefesh. That's something else. That's hanas gufoi. And Hanas Gufo, you have the rules are stricter for that. But for Ochol Nefesh, the rules are much more elastic, and therefore it should be mutter. Which is, in fact, the halacha. Now, what's the difference? The Gemara talked about yesterday that, for example, if you have, let's say, a piece of wood that's smoking a lot and it's causing the whole house to get smoky, you're not allowed to take it out of there or to put it out. You're not allowed to put it out. You would have to take it out of there if you have a problem with it. And here on the other, so we know that in general extinguishing is also on Yom Tov, whereas here we're allowing it. So one of the explanations, the chinuch gives an explanation, there's two different kinds of things where you're doing kibui. One is where you're doing it because you don't want the thing anymore. For example, you have a piece of wood that's burning and you don't want it to be burning anymore, so you're going to put it out. That would be also on Yom Tov, unless it's for Eichel Nefesh. On the other hand, here we're talking about that the extinguishing is part of the process of making something, namely where you're making food, you're roasting meat on the coals, and the juices are dripping onto them. That kind of kibui, which is part of melechas eichel nefesh, would be mutter. Also, other mepharshim point out, it's not necessarily that with dripping on the coals is going to put anything out. So it's not psik reisha. If it was psik reisha, maybe it would be different, but it's not. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Dorash Rav Gvir mi Beit Kosel apischa de Gvei Reish Kavosa. Rav Gvir from Beit Kosel, which is the name of a place, he darshaned as follows in front of the doorway of the Reish Kavosa. So the Reish Kavosa we've had before was the governor of the Jews in Babel. So he had a big mansion, of course, and people, I guess, used to gather there all the time. So one time, in front of his door, Rav Gvir mi Beit Kosel gave the following darsha. Ketura Shori. He darshaned that keturah is allowed. Now, he used the word keturah. He didn't clarify what he meant by that. Omale Amema, so Amema asked him, my keturah, what do you mean by this word keturah? What exactly are you saying is mutter on Yom Tov? E keturah bidi, do you mean the keturah that you do on, the wrists and sleeves of garments? So Rashi explains that it means pleats. You make pleats in the sleeve or in the wrist of the garment. So you're telling us keturah would be then meloshin tying, because like you tie it together sort of. You make the garment into pleats that'll stay that way. BD would be by the hands. There's elsewhere in Moed Katan, there's a Tosfos has a girsa, not BD but Biri, which where biri are garters that are used to hold up your socks. So the idea would be the same thing, to make pleats in garters. Anyway, so if you're talking about that kind of pleating, and you're saying that that's mutter on Yom Tov, how could that be? Of course it's not mutter, meister omanu. It's a professionally done thing to make pleats like that, and therefore it should be also. The ila ashen, if you're talking about ketura, meloshen smoke, which is ketura, that's the thing. The word ketura can be related to an Aramaic word kota, which means tie, or to another Aramaic kutra, which means smoke. So that's what he's asking him. Do you mean to make pleats? Then of course that's also. And if you're talking about to smoke fruit, like we said before, also to kamer the dreifa. Then again, it should be also, like we said before, like Rav and Rava said, because you're creating a new fragrance. So what kind of kutra are you, Rav Gvir, saying is mutter? Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi explained to Amema, "Ano Amrita Nihale. I'm the one who told Rav Gvir Mibei Kosel that this keturah is mutter. Or Mishmei de Gabra Rabra Amrita. And I told it to him in the name of a great person, in the name of a great Talmud Chacham, or a different Girsa, in the name of Rava. La'olam La'ashin. We are talking about that the keturah that he's talking about that's mutter does mean to smoke fruit. Umidi de Haba Abisa Agumi. And again, again, the reason is why it's mutter is because, like Robert said, it's the same thing as putting meat on coals, where even though you have where it is for oichol nefesh, and we do consider it shovel oichol nefesh, and we're not worried about the possible kibui that there might take place during that, and we're not worried about the molad reyach either, or because it's melechas oichol nefesh, and therefore that's what Rav Gvir is basing himself on to say that keturah is mutter, and by keturah he means to smoke fruit, not to make pleats. To make pleats, he says, I would definitely be awesome. We said in the Mishnah that a third thing you're not allowed, the third thing that Rav Gamliel said you're allowed to do, which the Chachamim disagreed, is va'osim gdi makulas. Rav Gamliel said you're allowed to eat, you're allowed to roast and eat a gdi makulas on Pesach night. This is after the Churban. Rav Gamliel was nasi after the Churban, but you're taking a gdi, a young goat or a young sheep, and you're roasting it in a style similar to the Korban Pesach. In particular, Rashi on the Mishnah explains the word makulas means with a helmet. The word makulas comes from an Aramaic word for helmet, because they would take the intestines and the legs of the animal. They'd roast them separately. They'd put them on the spit separately from the rest of the body of the animal. So therefore, it resembled a warrior with his helmet and his other gear near him. So Rav Gamliel allowed you to do that on Pesach night, as a zeichel of mikdash, and the chachamim asked it because just the opposite. It looks like you're eating kodshim outside the bais mikdash. So the Gemara says in this connection, Tanya, we learn in a brisa, Rabbi Yosi Omer, todes ish roimi, hinig todes, a man of roimi, so he was a distinguished person in the city of Rome. The Gemara in Pesachim discusses, is it that he was a talmid chacham, or is it that he was a rich person who was a big baal tzedakah? The Gemara brings there both possibilities. Anyway, hinig as pnei roimi lechol gdima kolos b'lei lepesachim. He created a minhag there in Rome that they should eat a gdima kolos on Pesach night. It's not so clear from the Gemara here whether this Todas lived in the time of the Bais Mikdash. We're talking Jews who, for whatever reason, couldn't make Aliyah L'Regel, so he was telling them to do that, or whether he lived after the Churban and he's telling them to do it as a Zecher. Whatever the case, Shochulei, the Chachamim sent him a message, Ilmole Todas after, if not for the fact that you were Todas. So here, Rashi follows the first explanation in Pesachim over there that he was a distinguished Talmid Chacham. The Gemara brings another possibility over there that he was a big Baal Tzedakah. Anyway, if you weren't Todas, such an important person, Gozranu Alechem Nidui, we would declare Nidui on you. We would put you in Cheirem. Shata Machalos, but it's your Kodshim Achutz, because you're causing Jewish people to eat Kodshim outside of this Mikdash. What do you mean, Kodshim is outside of that? What do you mean? They're not eating Kodshim. They were never Makdish these animals or anything. Ela Ema Ka'ein Kodshim. No, but what they meant is that you're making the Jewish people eat something similar to Kodshim, and then they're going to think people who see them eating that are going to think that they designated them as a Korban Pesach, and they're going to think you're allowed to shecht and eat a Korban Pesach outside Yerushalayim, which of course would be Chayav Koris. So therefore they told them to stop doing that. So now in the Mishnah we're saying that Rav Gamliel held like Todas that you're allowed to do that, and the Chachamim disagreed. Since we're mentioning things that Rav Gamliel allowed on Yom Tov, which the Chachamim disagreed. So the Gemara mentions something else. The Gemara mentions something similar with another Tana, where there were certain things that he said are mutter, and the other Chachamim said are also. So the Mishnah says, Shloisha Dvarim, Rav Elazar ben Azariah matir, v'Chachamim oisrim. There were three things that Rav Elazar ben Azariah said are mutter, and the Chachamim said are also. Number one, not all of them have to do with Yom Tov, but we're mentioning them again because it's similar to the Mishnah about Rav Gamliel. Parosa Yotza Beretzua Sheben Karnea. Number one, his cow would go out on Shabbos with a strap or a ribbon between its horns. Now, so we learned in the Sefer Shabbos that such a ribbon is not used in order to keep the animal from running away or something. It's not like you have a halter tied to it. It's strictly there for decoration. And therefore, the Chacham said it's also because it's considered a masri. It's considered something that the animal is carrying. It's not even considered a tachshik for the animal, because it's not the kind of thing that animals usually wear for decoration. But Rav Elazar ben Azariah disagreed. Number two, umakaudinas habehema b'yamtiv. Number two, Rav Elazar ben Azariah said, you're allowed to comb an animal on yamtiv. Now, we're going to have in the Mishnah, there's two different kinds. We're going to talk about Makaudin and Makautzefin. Makaudin involves a comb with small teeth. Rashi explains it means a metal comb. So, as opposed to, we're going to have soon, Makautzefin, which is using a comb with larger teeth, Rashi says it's made out of wood. So the point is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, you're allowed to use even the one with the smaller teeth. Even though it's possible that you may scratch the animal and cause a wound on it while you're combing it, you'd still be allowed to. Says Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And the Chachamim disagree, as we'll see. Number three, Rav Elazar ben Azariah held the Sheikh Gnesset Pilplin Berechaim Shalahen. Number three, he said you're allowed to grind up pepper in a pepper mill. Now, we learned previously in the first parak that you're allowed to grind spices on Yom Tov, because one of those things, if you grind them the day before, they're going to lose some of their flavor. But the Chachamim would say you're allowed to grind them like with a mortar and pestle. You put them in the mortar and you bang on them with a pestle. That would be mutter. But not to use the regular pepper mill that you use for them. Whereas Rav Elazar ben Azariah allows it because, for one thing, it's small and it's not a normal way. So he would say it's not a normal way of grinding on Yom Tov. Therefore, it should be mutter. Going back to the second one, where Rav Elazar ben Azariah had said that you're allowed to do makaudin, that you're allowed to comb the animal using a comb with small teeth. Rav Yehuda and the ein makaudin as habehem of Yom Tov b'peisha oisa chabura. So Rav Yehuda disagrees with Rav Elazar ben Azariah. He says you can't do makaudin with a comb with small teeth. because it's going to cause a wound on the animal. It has small, sharp teeth, so therefore it's going to end up scratching the animal and causing it to, and then causing a wound, which is also on Yom Tov. Avo makautzefin, but Rabbi Yehuda says you are allowed to do makautzefin, which is you use a wooden comb, which has larger teeth, and that's much less likely to scratch the animal. The Chum said you can't do. The Chum say you can't do either one for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Okay. So on the first one, we said Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's cow would go out on Shabbos with a strap between its horns, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah allowed it. So the Gemara asks, which we have the same thing on Shabbos. Lememra did Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah chod a par ahavyalei? You're telling me Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah only had one cow that you're saying his cow? Tlaser Alfi Egli, 13,000 calves, have him asked Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Me'edre, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would take off his meiser from his bird, Kol Shata V'Shata, every year. So here it says Tlaser, which is 13,000. In other places where the Gemara brings this, it says Tresar, which is 12,000. Whatever the case, the point is, if he's taking meiser from his calves every year, 12 or 13,000, means that 120,000 or 130,000 calves were born in his herd every year because he was extremely rich. So therefore, so why are we saying his cow as if he only had the one cow? Tosfos, by the way, talks about a side issue. What do we mean that he took meiser from them? Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we know, became Nasi at 18. So Tosfos makes the calculation. We don't know the exact years, but at least we can approximate. You had a period of time when Rabbi Gamliel was Nasi before they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Gamliel became Nasi only sometime after the Churban, because shortly after the Churban, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was still alive, and he made a bunch of takanos that we learned some about them in Sukkah. We're going to learn more. We learned about some of them in Sukkah. We're going to learn about all of them, Be'ez Hashem, and Masech the Rosh Hashanah, which is next. Anyway, so Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai definitely lived a couple of years after the Churban. Only then did Rabbi Gamliel become the full Nasi. Maybe up until that point, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was kind of acting Nasi, but still, the fact is, Rabbi Gamliel didn't become full Nasi until several years after the Churban had come out. Then you had Rabbi Gamliel was Nasi for several years, and only then did they depose him, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became Nasi for a period of time. Meanwhile, and at that point he was 18, meanwhile, one of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai's takanos, or one of the, it doesn't say Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai specifically, I don't think, but one of the takanos after the Churban was that we don't do Maisa Behena anymore because there's going to be takala. You're going to have a big problem. You're going to end up forgetting that these animals are Maisa, and you're going to end up using them, and then you're going to be doing Ne'ilah with Kodshim. So Tosfos over here and in some other places discusses a few possibilities. One is that maybe the takana to stop doing Maisa Behema took place only several years after the Churban. So meanwhile, there were a couple of years in between when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had a chance to do Maisa Sheni before they were vatal it. Another possibility is that it doesn't mean Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah himself, it means his guardian. In other words, his father passed away when he was young. He had a guardian who was taking care of the estate for him, and he would take this Maisa before the Churban. And a third possibility is Meiser over here doesn't mean Meiser that's brought as a korban. And that brought as a korban, it means rather Meiser that he had to pay his taxes to the king. So those are three possibilities Tosfos brings up. And then there are other Rishonim bring up another possibility as well. Maybe even though the din of Meiser Sheni no longer applied, still Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah on his own voluntarily took Meiser from his cattle or his sheep and whatever and gave them to Kohanim. Whatever the case, the point is that he was extremely rich. He had lots and lots of cattle, certainly more than one cow. So why are we saying his cow as though it was the only one? The answer is Tana. We learn in a Braisa. Loi shaloi hoisa ela shal shchedzei hoisa. It actually wasn't his cow. It belonged to his neighbor. Or mitoch shaloi michaba. But because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did not protest her doing that, which the Chachamim are saying, that's also on Shabbos, Nikris al Shmoi, then it's called on his name. The Mishnah makes it sound as though it was his own cow, because as the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, if a person has the ability to protest somebody else doing an Aveira, and he doesn't, then he's blamed for it. So we hear Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is blamed for it. In fact, the Yerushalmi bring over here something that the Yerushalmi says on this. The Yerushalmi says that the Chachamim told Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you either get this taken care of, or we're going to expel you from our group, from the group of the Chachamim and the Yeshiva. So I guess he went and took care of it, but also he realized how serious it was, that just because he holds its mutter doesn't mean it really is. The fact is, he should have been machmir like the Chachamim, and therefore the Yerushalmi says he fasted so much about that that his teeth ended up turning black. The Alter Rebbe brings this in Igeres HaTshuva as one of a few examples where we find where Chachamim fasted a huge number of fasts for something that in principle shouldn't even require, all it requires is basic tshuva, but these Chachamim wanted to do, like when you bring a korban ola to that Hashem should, that you should be just on good terms, so to speak, with Hashem as before. So the same way Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and other Chachamim in similar situations did this in order that Hashem should be willing to accept them as beautifully as before, and not hold any vestige of the Aveira against them. Then we said in the Mishnah, "Umakardinus abehema b'yamtiv." We said that Rav Elazar ben Azariah says you're allowed to do kirud of an animal on yamtiv, which we said meant with a comb with small teeth. And then we said that Rabbi Yehuda had brought in the possibility of makartifin, where instead of using a comb with small teeth, you use one with large teeth. And the Gemara says, "Tana rabbanan, ezehu kirud ve'ezehu kirud." So, what is the definition of these two things? Kirud ktanim v'osim kabura. Kirud involves that the comb has small teeth, and therefore it causes a wound on the animal, or it's very likely to. Kirtzuf gedolim v'osim kabura. Kirtzuf means that it's larger teeth, and therefore it's less likely to cause a wound. The Rambam actually, now it's interesting, the Gemara over here doesn't say anything about the size of the teeth. It just says big or small, and Rashi explains it means the size of the teeth. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos has a different explanation of it. He says that we're not talking about the size of the teeth. We're talking about the size of the insects that attach themselves to the animal. So ktanim would be small creatures like ticks or something. Where there, when you remove them, they're much more likely to cause some bleeding on the animal because they're very tightly attached. As opposed to kirtzuf would be removing the larger flies and bugs and whatever that attach themselves to the animal. Where there, you're not likely to make a wound when you remove them because they're not so tightly attached. So according to the Rambam, it's not the size of the teeth of the comb, it's the size of the insect that you're removing from the animal with the combing. Anyway, so the Gemara continues, the gimel machloikas bedavar. So there's actually a three-way machloikas about this. Rabbi Yehuda saw a dove shenim eskaven osir. Rabbi Yehuda holds that when you're doing a malacha, even if you didn't intend to do that malacha, it's still osir, as we had many times in Shabbos when he holds that way. Mihu, however, Rabbi Yehuda says, kirud tanim v'osim chabura. However, given that kirud involves small ones, small teeth according to Rashi, or small insects according to the Rambam, v'osim chabura, and you're very likely to make a wound, they're very likely to cause the animal to bleed when you do that. Therefore, it wouldn't be allowed. Kirtzuf, the main is in Chabura, whereas kirtzuf involves large ones, large teeth, or large insects, and therefore you're not likely to make a Chabura. The light goes in, kirtzuf, otu kirud, we're not going to make a Zera. Don't do kirtzuf, because you might come to do kirud instead. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't worry about that. Therefore, he says kirud is also kirtzuf as mutter. But Rabbanan Sabri Nami Ki Rabbi Yehuda, Dover Shem Eskaven Osir. The Chachamim, meanwhile, agree with Rabbi Yehuda about the part of Dover Shem Eskaven being Osir. But they add, because we're in Kirtzuf, Otu Kirud. But they add, you can't do Kirtzuf on Yom Tov because you might come to do Kirud, and Kirud would cause the animal to bleed, and that would be Dover Shem Eskaven and would be Osir. Meanwhile, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds like Rabbi Shimon, that it doesn't matter. Dov Hashem is Kavan is Mutter. You're not intending to cause the animal a wound. You're not intending to cause it to bleed. Therefore, even if you do, as long as it's not Psikuresha, it's fine. Therefore, Ben Kirud, or Ben Kirud, or Ben Kirud, Shari. Therefore, either one is Mutter. Now, with that said, though, Tosva says, the fact is, when you use a comb, the Tosfos describes the combs that they had in their times, which were made out of metal. Now, fine, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, there's no problem of using a metal comb because you're not necessarily going to cause a wound. However, Tosfos points out there is a different point with it, that the metal combs that they used in Tosfos' times almost pretty much inevitably pull out hair. Therefore, that's a psik reisha of a different kind. You're doing a malacha of gozes, removing hair from the animal, and therefore, for that reason, you wouldn't be able to use that. So you'd have to use the kind of comb where I guess the kind of metal comb they had in the time of the Gemara. Maybe the teeth were spaced further apart so that it wasn't going to tear out hair. And it's not necessarily going to wound the animal either. And even if it does, it's not a psik resha, and it's davar shein miskaven, so therefore it would be mutter. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel, V'ami la'omer Rav Nachman l'chudei. Another version is that Rav Nachman said on his own, not in the first version is that he said in the name of Shmuel. The second version is that Rav Nachman says it on his own. Halacha k'Rav Shimon. The halacha is like Rav Shimon. Dov Hashanim eskaven as mutter. For example, we looked in Masech the Shabbos that you're allowed to drag a light bench or something on the ground and on the dirt, and we're not worried that it's going to dig up dirt because it's not inevitable that it will. So the halacha is like Rav Shimon, Rav Elazar ben Azariah murder, like, because we see that Rav Elazar ben Azariah agrees with him and says in our Mishnah that combing an animal is mutter.
He's still on the road. The Chachamim said it's not mutter. How come the halacha is like this?
So Rava asked Rav Nachman, what do you mean the halacha should be like Rav Shimon because Rav Elazar ben Azariah agreed with him? Just the opposite. Exactly your question. You should say the other way around. The halacha is like the Chachamim. The halacha is like Rav Yehuda because the Chachamim in our Mishnah, who are the Rav, agree with him. So Rav Nachman says, that's not what I meant. What I meant was, I'm not Rav Shimon severely. I hold like Rav Shimon independently. Bechlal, I hold the halacha as like Rav Shimon in this matter of davar shein miskaven. And v'oid, and I have another reason besides the fact that I find Rav Shimon's svara more compelling, and therefore that I say the halacha should be like him. Besides that, shayrei Rav Elazar ben Azariah moideloi, you see that he's not a das yachid. You see that he has Rav Elazar ben Azariah on his side as well. And in fact, we do paskin like that. We do paskin like Rav Shimon that davar shein miskaven is mutter. So the fact that Rav Elazar ben Azariah agrees with him is a side thing. The real reason is because Rav Nachman held that that's how it should be, and that's how it is.
Even all the Chachamim said it's not like that.
Even though the Chachamim disagreed and said like Rav Yehuda, nevertheless, Rav Nachman is entitled to pick a side and say like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So yeah, this is one of the rare cases where the halacha is like a yachid. But again, it's not really so much. It's really because the initial machloikas is really between Rav Yehuda, the general machloikas of davar shein miskaven is between two yechidim, Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon. So Rav Nachman is entitled to pick Rav Shimon over Rav Yehuda. And then, by the way, in our Mishnah, it comes out that you're going according to a das yachid because you're going according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah. But that's not the primary reason why Rav Nachman passed in that way.
The primary reason is he says there's two yachidim here, but there were also chachamim before who were outnumbering Rabbi Yehuda.
Not necessarily. The fact, first of all, I mean, it's true. Chronologically, actually, Rav Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim come before Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. It's true. Nevertheless, though, the fact is, the famous machloikas of davar shein miskaven, mutter also, is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and both of them are yechidim. We don't specifically find what in their generation, what the other Chachamim held one way or the other. So it could even be, I mean, we could even say then, fine, in Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's times, maybe the Chachamim who held that it's also were the majority, but by the time Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon came along, then it wasn't necessarily that way. The fact is, a later Beis Din is able, the Rambam describes, for example, that if the Chachamim in one generation come up with a din, let's say, based on the Yud Gimel Midas Shatorin addresses for him, not a Gzeder or Takona or something, then a later group of Chachamim are entitled to disagree with them. So maybe you could have something like this over here. In Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's time, the Chachamim who held differently were the majority. By the time of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, they weren't necessarily. All we hear about is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon arguing on this. We don't really hear about the opinions of the other Chachamim. And therefore, Rabbi Nachman can well paskin like Rabbi Shimon because he's only a Yachid, fine, but Rabbi Yehuda is also only a Yachid. Okay. Anyway. Since we mentioned the pepper grinder that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said you're allowed to grind pepper with it on Shabbos, and the Chachamim disagree, so by the way, the Mishnah digresses to tell us a little bit about this pepper mill. Now, the pepper mills, at least the kind they had in those days, were made out of three parts. Nowadays also, sometimes you go to a fancy restaurant, they'll grind pepper right in front of you. I don't know whether the pepper mills that they have nowadays are constructed similarly to the ones that they had in the time of the Gemara that we're going to describe here. But anyway, the kind that we're describing here is as follows. You have, on top, you have grinding wheels, which actually grind up the peppercorns. So those wheels are made out of wood and plated with metal so that they can grind effectively. Then underneath them, you have a sieve through which the ground pepper falls. And then you have at the bottom is a wooden keli that the ground pepper falls into. So the Mishnah says, Harif Chaim Shal Pipel and Tmeya Mishim Shloisha Kalim. It's Tomei as three different kalim. Which means, in other words, Rashi says, so even if, let's say, one part breaks off, the other two are still able to be Makabel Tumah. Tosfos says, another point of it is also that even the other way around also, even if they're all connected together and one of them becomes Tomei, the other two do not. So let's say, for example, you had a dead sheret, touched the top part, then according to Tosfos is saying, only the top part would become Tomei and not the bottom two parts. And according to Rashi, it's also, even if the top part broke off, the middle and the bottom part are still able to be Makabel Tumah. Anyway, Mishum Kli Kibul, on the bottom you have the container, the wooden container into which the pepper, into which the ground pepper falls. Umishum kli machis, you also have, there's a metal keli involved, namely the grinding wheels. Umishum kli kvara, and then you also have, there's a sieve, which is also Makabel Tumah. Why is a sieve Makabel Tumah? So we'll explain, let's learn the two lines of Gemara, and then we'll explain. Tana, so we're learning a braise. Tachtoni mishum kli kibul. The bottom part of the pepper grinder is Makabel Tumah as a kli kibul. It's made out of wood, and had it been flat, it wouldn't be Makabel Tumah. But because it has a receptacle, the usual rule is that wooden kalim that have a receptacle are Makabel Tumah. And Emsois mishum kli kvara. The middle one, which is the sieve, is Makabel Tumah as a kli kvara. Now Rashi describes that part. Is not made out of a metal mesh. If it was made out of a metal mesh, then of course it would be Tomei anyway, all metal, Kalim, I'm a Makabel Tumah. It's made out of, Rashi explains it's made out of a wooden mesh. Nevertheless, says Rashi, even as a wooden mesh, it's Makabel Tumah, Rashi says, because it's very similar, a mesh is made in a very similar way to a woven cloth. Therefore, Rashi says the Chachamim said that it's Makabel Tumah Midrabanim. Tosfos disagrees with that. Come on, I mean, a wooden mesh is nothing at all like something woven. Rather, Tosfos says that what it is the reason why the mesh is Makabel Tumah is because when you grind in a pepper, the finer flakes of pepper fall through, but you have the outer coating, the outer covering of the peppercorn or other things like that, other things that might be mixed in there that are held back by the mesh. And therefore, that's reason for that to be Makabel Tumah, because it is a kli kibul. It's a wooden keli that does, in fact, have a receptacle because it holds things inside it. And then, El Yonim, Mishum Klei Matris, the top part of the pepper grinder is Makabel Tumah as a metal keli, because, again, you have wooden wheels over there that are plated with metal. Now, usually, we would say the metal is bottled to the wood, but here it's the other way around. The metal is the main active part of it. The metal is what actually grinds the pepper. The wood is only there in order to support it from behind. Therefore, the whole thing, therefore, that part with the wheels is Makabel Tumah. Okay. Since we're talking about things, about dinim of things that are Makabel Tumah, so let's talk about another one. The Mishnah says, Agola Shel Katan, the Agola of a child. Rashi explains we're talking about a stroller. Now we're going to say that's Tomei Midras. So let's learn the Mishnah, and then we'll talk about what Tosfos says on it. So Rashi says, Agola Shel Katan means a baby stroller. Tmeya Midras, it's Makabel Tumah Midras, meaning if the baby himself is a Zov, then stroller is Tomei Midras, because it's a normal thing for the baby to sit on it, and then just to sit on it. So, and Rashi explains, we know the general rule of Tumah Midras is that if the primary purpose or major purpose of something is not to sit or lean or whatever, or lie on it, then it's not Makabel Tumah Midras, because they tell him, Amoid Benasim Lachtenu, get up, we want to use it for our work. But a baby's stroller is not like that. It's made for the baby to sit or to lie in. Therefore, if the baby is a Zov, then the stroller is Tomei. Now, Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says, if we're talking about a stroller, of course it's Makabel Tumah Midras. Obviously, it's made for the baby to sit in. So rather, Tosfos says, we're talking about a baby walker. Now, nowadays, you don't see them much anymore, because sometimes a baby falls over in them and get hurt. So people use them less. But in the old days, they had these baby walkers, like kind of a frame that surrounds the baby, and then holds on to it, and then learns to walk around. So it's not the baby doesn't lie on it or sit on it or whatever, but on the other hand, he does sometimes rest his weight on it, and that's reason enough, Tosfos says, for it to be Makabel Tumah Midras.
Is it shkiach for a child to be a zav?
Not shkiach, but it could happen. I mean, in principle, even a baby on the day he's born could become a zav, and similarly, that's for a boy. A girl on the girl could be as little as 10 days old and become a zava. Besides which, also the chachamim made a gzera that all goyim are considered zavim midrabanan. So therefore, we could be talking about, let's say you have a stroller or a baby walker that was used by a goyish kid. So now we're saying that it would be tummy midras.
Oh, so if the Yiddish kid would play with it, then they would be kabbal tumah.
Then they'd be tummy, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number two, the Mishnah says, when you tell us for Shabbos, you are allowed to move the stroller or the walker on Shabbos, because it is a keli after all. So therefore, in other words, that's a keli, so therefore it's not mukta. Number three, the ain't any gueris ella agabe kelim. When you're dragging it around, when you want to use it to walk the child around on Shabbos, you can only do it on top of cloths. Because otherwise, what's going to happen is it's going to dig. You had bad dirt floors in those days and dirt streets, and therefore you're going to end up making a groove in the ground, and therefore you're doing the malacha of chodesh, of plowing the ground. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says no. I agree you're not allowed to drag any other kalim, especially Rabbi Huda is the one who holds, as we said before, Dovashenim is Skaven also. So even if you're not intending to dig up the ground, then it would be also to do that. Chutzmin ha'agola, he says, with the exception of a stroller or this walker, because it doesn't dig up the dirt, it presses it down. When you have where the stroller went or where the baby walker, the pastures, I guess, is on wheels also, so where it went, you know, when you see a groove in the ground, it's not that the dirt was moved aside, which is what happens when you're dragging things. The dirt was being pressed down by the wheels, therefore that shouldn't be usur on Shabbos, says Rabbi Huda. So the Gemara says, "Agola shall cut in Tmei Medras." Now, why are we saying that this baby stroller or walker is Tmei Medras? The stomach can obey because the child rests his weight on it. So according to Rashi, he rests his full weight on it because it's a stroller. According to Tosfos, he's not necessarily resting his full weight on it because much of his weight is on his feet because he's learning to walk. But still, he leans on it with his arms, with his hands and his arms, and therefore that's enough for it to be makabel Tmei Medras. We said when he tell us for Shabbos, we said that you can move it on Shabbos, and the reason is because, like we said, Mishum Leikah Torah Kli Allah, because it has the form and the function of a keli, so therefore it can't be mukta. You wouldn't say it's like dirt or rocks or whatever that are mukta. And when he said ve'ein negreis agabe kelim, el agabe kelim, we said the third thing that Tanakama had said was that you can only drag it on Shabbos on clothes. Implying on pieces of cloth, al gabe kelim and al gabe kalkaloi, implying but not on the bare ground. Now, my timer, why not to call it choritz? The reason is because you're making a groove in the ground. So, the Gemara says, mani, the problem with that is, who would that be like Rabbi Yehuda? Apparently, that would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Dama dava shayim eskaven also. Whereas we just said, Rabbi Yehuda says, even though you're not intending to dig up the ground, nevertheless, that's what you're doing, and that's reason enough to ask it. So, but the ear of Shimon, however, Damash and Dan is Savin Mutter. After all, according to Reb Shimon, we would say there should be no problem with moving the stroller on dirt anyway, even if it did actually dig up the dirt. Because Reb Shimon says, Damash and Savin is Mutter. The Tnan, or the Tanya, really, it's a Braisa. Reb Shimon, I'm a good other Mita Kisav Asasel. Reb Shimon says a person is allowed on Shabbos or on Yom Tov to drag a bed or chair or bench over Vajli Skaven Lasas Horitz, as long as he's not intending to make a groove in the ground. So it sounds like, therefore, our Mishnah has to be according to Rabbi Yehuda, Ema Sefer, but then we have in the Sefer, Rabbi Yehuda, Ema Ena Kol Negron M'Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't drag anything on Shabbos, Chutz Min Agola, except for a wagon, except for a stroller, but Meshi Keveshes, because it presses down the dirt. Implying that Meshi Keveshes Ena V'Horitz Loi. So you're saying that because the reason why Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's mutter, because it's only pressing down the dirt, it's not actually moving any dirt from its place. So what is it? Is our Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda or not? Who else would it be like? It can't be like Rabbi Shimon, because according to him, there should be no problem with the stroller. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, but we see Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing with the Tanakama. So who is the Tanakama? The answer is, Trei Tanoi Valibid Rabbi Yehuda. There are two Tanoim within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, who disagree within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Namely, you have the Tanakama holds, both of them hold like Rabbi Yehuda that Dovah Shani Miskaven also. But the Tanakama says Therefore, you shouldn't be allowed to use a stroller or a baby walker on Shabbos on a dirt floor because what happens? Sometimes a wheel gets stuck and then it ends up digging. So therefore, you should aser on those grounds. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, when we continue in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, that means a second Tana, according to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, who says that's not very common, that a wheel should get stuck. Therefore, you don't have a problem when the wheels turn. They just press down the dirt. Therefore, there should be no problem. We're not going to be worried about one wheel getting stuck and digging up the dirt. There's no reason to make a gzeira for that. The halacha anyway is like Reb Shimon, Dover Shemim is Scavin is Mutter, so even if you do have a wheel of the stroller or the walker stuck, you would be allowed to use it on Shabbos or Yom Tov on dirt, as long as you're not intending to dig up the dirt, and as long as it's not so heavy that inevitably it's going to dig up the dirt, because that would be Psik Resha. Hadron halacha Yom Tov.
Yishkoyev.
Back, everyone. Good night.